or saying about it.
I've been taking Calitrim for right about 3 months, and I've lost 24 pounds and 19 overall inches. But my sleep has improved, I have so much more energy, and I have the desire to succeed more than ever. Anyone who needs weight loss, more energy, and better sleep, this product really does deliver.
Hi, I'm Roger. Over the 3 months that I took the product, my sleeping habits are increasingly much better. I got a better night's sleep, and I just can't say enough about the product and how it makes you feel. Also, additionally lost a little bit of weight on the program as well.
Hi, this is Aronson. I take Calitrin for weight loss, and I've lost about 20 pounds, and I feel great.
Calitrin is scientifically proven to help with sleep and weight loss safely and effectively. Check it out at toploss.com. That's toploss.com.
Nothing unusual in Washington as Republicans and Democrats are disagreeing, this time, among other things, about whether the whistleblower involved in President Trump's July phone call with the Ukrainian president should be identified publicly. Senate Minority Leader Democrat Chuck Schumer says that's crazy. That goes against everything that a whistleblower is supposed to be.
Whistleblowers who stand up for the Constitution should not be targeted by the president or powerful members of the legislative branch.
Meanwhile, a State Department official is behind closed doors giving testimony in the House impeachment inquiry at this hour. David Hale breaking a string of Trump administration officials who had refused to testify this week. One suspect connected to the murders of members of an American family in Mexico is in custody. Three women and six kids were shot and burned after their vehicles were ambushed by members of a drug cartel on Monday. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
A new survey finding a record number of chief executive officers of major corporations have left their jobs this year. According to Challenger Gray and Christmas, 1,332 chief execs have left so far this year, 172 of them stepping down just last month. It's a 13% increase from January through October of 2018. And prior to this year, the largest number of CEO exits in the same time took place during the Great Recession in 2008. That's when over 1,200 left. The number is now the largest total since the company began keeping tabs on CEO departures a couple of decades ago. Technology and financial companies have seen the largest number of CEO departures. Federal regulators say a self-driving Uber that struck and killed a woman in Arizona last year failed to stop because she was not in a crosswalk. The woman killed by the self-driving Uber that was being tested in Tempe, the National Transportation Safety Board says the Uber system design did not include a consideration for jaywalkers. And the glittery socks that the late Michael Jackson wore in 1983 when he introduced the moonwalk dance to the American public, well, they're now going up on the auction block. Yeah, gotta have rockandroll.com expects to haul in at least $1 million for them, maybe as much as $2 million. And for USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com. And I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hutton Chamber Radio entitled Awaken to Your Purpose. How many people walk through life awake and knowing why they were incarnated here in this beautiful planet? Not a lot of people do. I was in my late 40s by the time I found out, but now I know. So listen to the show, and maybe that'll promote you to awaken to your purpose. And thank you so much.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Welcome couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Toy Story 4, Child's Play, and Anna, plus a retro review of the Robin Williams Black Mirror-ish movie, The Final Cut from 2004. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup with a spotlight on the Universal Horror Collection Volume 1, featuring Karloff and Lugosi in The Black Cat, The Raven, The Invisible Ray, and Black Friday. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
A couple pieces of small news here that I wanted to hit. One of them is the fact that something I predicted earlier this year, and I'm absolutely right, and that is Avengers Endgame is going to be re-releasing into theaters, coinciding with Spider-Man Far From Home. Now, they're re-releasing it with a little bit of extra unseen footage. Apparently, there's some post-credit stuff that they're going to be doing, and to give a little extra goose to the box office. And the only reason they're really doing this, I mean, they're doing it maybe to cross-promote with Spider-Man, but the real reason they're doing this is that movie is just $45 million away from breaking the all-time worldwide record that Avatar holds, which is billions of dollars, but it's $45 million away. That's why it's going out back in theaters. And I don't know, it's not going to make that necessarily in America, but maybe worldwide it'll push it just enough over the finish line. And Disney has been known to keep things in the theaters just long enough to reach their milestones. Another piece of news, which I find perplexing, Jason Blum and Jamie Lee Curtis were taking pictures of themselves and tweeting it out, going, "We're planning things," of course, implying that they're getting ready to do another Halloween movie, which is great. I loved David Gordon Greer's Halloween. My biggest beef with this whole story isn't that they're planning the movie, isn't that they're planning on a fall shoot this year. It's supposed to start shooting in September, and it's not at all bothered by the fact that it has a 2020 release date, I'm assuming sometime in October, very similar to what happened with the Halloween movie they did last year. I'm all for that, and I love the fact that Jason Blum is following the 80s slasher business plan of cranking them out with short schedules and small budgets so you can have a series go through just a couple years, which is great. And that's exactly how movies like Halloween and Friday the 13th did so well in the 80s in the first place. My biggest beef is everyone's calling it Halloween 2, and I'm like, well, it's not Halloween 2. This last Halloween was a direct sequel to Halloween. That makes this last movie, if anything, Halloween 2. And is this one going to be Halloween 3? Figure out how you're going to name these stupid movies, or just make it Halloween. Say, go see Halloween, and just call it Halloween 2020. Because at this point, the Halloween movies are so insane with their titling that it makes no sense. But as long as you keep Rob Zombie as far away from this franchise as possible, I will be happy. The next piece of news I think is interesting that's coming out is that Suzanne Collins is already in the works of writing a new Hunger Games movie, which takes place, I think it's around the 10th Hunger Games, so it's well earlier than Katniss Everdeen existed. So you're not going to get Jennifer Lawrence in the movie, and I don't think you would have gotten it anyways. I think she would have been like, look guys, I fulfilled my contract on that and I'm done. I mean, thank you, and it was great, and it propelled me to superstardom, but I got other things on my plate. And it's the same reason why she got out of the X-Men movies. I mean, that was great for her to be in the X-Men First Class, but I think she's done with it, and she wants to move on. And maybe you'll see her in another superhero movie, but you're not going to see her in the new Hunger Games. This is a prequel, and it reminds me a lot of what's going on with the Harry Potter universe films. Now, of course, a lot of this is just because they want to generate more money. Apparently, Suzanne Collins bought a new house or a new car or needs to make a payment on something or just wants some more cash. And that's fine. Go ahead, knock yourself out. I'm all for that. If I wrote The Hunger Games, I'd be writing prequels already. But here's my prediction on this one. It's going to be very similar to the Fantastic Beasts movies that have had diminishing returns. The first Fantastic Beasts did well. did better overseas, but it did okay, but it wasn't nearly as strong as the other Harry Potter movies. And this second one, The Crimes of Grindelwald, that one also had a slower start in America. It actually, I don't even think it made $200 million in America. And overseas, it's the lowest of the Harry Potter movies. And there might be one excluding, but I think it's actually the lowest grossing of the Wizarding World movies. And I have a feeling you're going to get that with The Hunger Games, because you're going to have somebody to replace Jennifer Lawrence, because she was integral to that series. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is the Banana Split Show movie, which opens on August 13th on digital, and I think it's coming out on DVD and Blu-ray at the end of August.
Who's excited to see the Banana Split?
Yeah! Rebecca! Rebecca!
Rebecca, I'm canceling the show.
What?
Hey, kids, put on your happiest faces, because the Banana Split Show is about to begin.
Making up a Why are you doing this to me?
Now the show can go on forever and ever and ever.
I remember the Banana Splits when I was a little kid. It was an early 70s cartoon, this sort of wraparound variety show thing that was as not quite as psychedelic as the Sid and Marty Krofft stuff, like H.R. Puff and stuff or anything like that. But it was still bonkers and crazy. And what they do is they'd have these little sketches and almost like a children's laugh-in, where they have these little sketches that tied together short films and cartoons. And they had this TV series called Danger Island, which was actually pretty terrible but kind of cool, and it was like directed by like I think Richard Donner at the time, who went on to direct Superman and the Lethal Weapon films. There were those kiddie things, and I remember they actually had the series of them in the credits. They'd be driving around or running around Kings Island, which is, you know, within driving distance. I go to Kings Island every year with my kids, and I remember going there in the 70s, and the Brady Bunch went to Kings Island. It showed up in a lot of stuff in the 70s because it was and it still is a fantastic amusement park. But the difference is with this one is this is going to be a monster movie. This is a scary film. They're basically making the Banana Splits like a Five Nights at Freddy's movie, where the giant puppet-type creatures attack people and kill them, and it turns into a horror movie, which has me fascinated because this stuff kind of was a horror movie at the beginning. I mean, if you look at Bingo Flegel, Drooper, and Snork, these were monstrous nightmare fuel creatures that were in plush outfits that if any child saw on the street, they would run screaming into their parents' arms. I could get into this. Like I said, the idea of a Five Nights at Freddy's movies has always intrigued a lot of fanboys, and I think it could be cool. This might be a nice way to dip your toe into it and see how well it does work. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Good Boys, which opens on August 16th.
I'm having a party tomorrow. You in?
Yeah.
Can Thor and Lucas come? They're so random. They're my best friends. We do everything together.
There's so many girls at the party. You know what that means?
Drama.
No, kissing.
You do not want to go to Soren's party not knowing how to kiss.
We could spy on my neighbor. She's a total nymphomaniac.
She starts fires.
Cat. This is what happens when you don't respect women.
I respect women. My mom's my best friend.
What about me?
I have always sort of come and gone with my affinity towards these movies of kids doing inappropriate things on a all-night or all-day bender type thing. Superbad was funny, but some of these movies can get kind of, I don't know, nihilistic, or I don't appreciate some of them. Even when I was a kid, you know, stuff like, what was the one, The Wildlife or something like that. I've never been wild on these. The one reason I think this might be kind of fun is because these kids are actually way too young, and everything that seems to be happening around them, they have no idea what it is. And it's them in these inappropriate situations, but literally not have enough experience, which I think plays to the comedy better, as opposed to having like that movie mid-90s that came out last year where you got this 11 or 12-year-old that's talking about doing extremely inappropriate stuff I can't say on the radio. So anyways, I'm looking forward to that one. This one could be funny, but who knows? August release, you never know. And that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Child's Play and Anna.
So you sit down and do...
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
An interesting poll that doesn't ask how you're going to vote, but what you expect the results to be. 56% of respondents in this new national poll say they expect President Trump will be reelected. The Politico Morning Consult survey of 2,000 registered voters also found high levels of enthusiasm for the election among both Republicans and Democrats. 92% of the respondents say they are likely to vote in next year's national elections. A hospital in Fayetteville, North Carolina, is safe and secure after an officer-involved shooting this morning of a suspect who was taken into custody last night for an alleged home invasion.
Suspect started experiencing medical problems, so he was brought to the hospital here.
And the Cumberland County Sheriff says after he was, the suspect struggled for a deputy's gun, and a Fayetteville cop shot him dead. This is USA Radio News.
There's no question you need omega-3s. But which form should you take? Fish oil or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you. We'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now. 1-800-399-6392. 1-800-399-6392. That's 1-800-399-6392.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
When friends are not enough and you are struggling with depression, anxiety, or addictions, it's time to seek out help. Mental health is one of the most important building blocks to a healthy life. Tune into Counselor's Chat every Wednesday at noon and listen to many topics that pertain to good mental health. With Ruth Altamura Roll, a licensed professional counselor, as your host, you will learn about many facets of good mental health. Let's remove the stigma. Go to www.altarolecounselor.net for more information about my practice. And please follow me on Counselor's Chat on Facebook. Remember, Counselor's Chat every Wednesday at noon. I wish you good mental health. Well, good afternoon and welcome to Counselor's Chat. I am Ruth Altamura Roll, your host. I'm a licensed professional counselor and I have a small practice here in Flemington. I have been in the field of counseling for 35 years, and I am now in my 20th year of private practice. If you are interested in finding out more about what I do, please follow me. You can look up my webpage at www.altarolecounselor.com. The little jingle says .net. It is .com. So today, well, one of the things that I do is I go on this site called Brownie Locks. I don't know why that's the name of it, but that's the name of it. And it lists different months, November is, National Month of Turkey, Save a Turkey, and National Month of Pumpkin Bread, and National Month of all kinds of weird things. But it also gives some other things. And one of the things that I noticed was it's National Tell Your Family Story Month. And as a counselor, one of the things that I do is I ask about families. I ask about, what happened to you as a child and your memories and your emotions and things that you learned. And as, I'm going to say as a mental health counselor, I think any counselor, psychologist, psychiatrist, all the way back to Freud, finding out about family stories is a key issue. It has been questioned whether it is nature or nurture. Well, what does that mean for those of you that may not know? Nature is what did I get through my DNA? That's nature. What did I get through that? And nurture is what did I learn in my family? Well, we used to say it was 50-50 because we really didn't know. But more studies are beginning to show that it's actually 40 nature and 60 nurture. So, yes, you know, I got my brown hair, my brown eyes, my height, my metabolism from my family, the possibility of depression, alcoholism, and other addictions and diabetes. Got that from my family. But there were things that I learned in my family. Things about my outlook on life. Is the world safe? Aspects of myself, my self-esteem, my sense of worth, my spiritual belief systems, my ability to have empathy, my codependency, even my choice in friends, and my choice in my spouse has influence from my family. Some of the things that I enjoy, I learned from my family. Things like classical music and art, the way I decorate, some of it has to do with my family, my love for history. I think there's a lot of things, and tradition also, a lot of tradition in my family. So a little bit of a background from my personal background. So my mother's side, I'm a second generation American. So that means that my grandparents on my mother's side and my grandparents on my father's side both immigrated to the United States. My father's side of the family is Italian, hence the name Altamura. So Altamura hyphen Roll is my husband's name. And they came through Ellis Island, my grandmother, Philomena, and my grandfather, Nicholas. They actually met here in the United States. So they did not come married. They came as single people. They moved to a very Italian community in New Jersey and were introduced and married and had four children. I remember my grandparents, my Italian grandparents, fairly well. The traditions, the food, we did not have a very, like people think of Italian families often as warm and hugging and generous, and there is that, and super protective, the family. There is that Italian family. Then there's the other one that's cold and distant and relatively non-responsive, violent. That's a little bit more what my Italian side of the family was like. So there was a lot of violent abuse between my grandmother and grandfather. My father was severely abused by his father. My grandfather was also an alcoholic. Italian, making wine in the basement. He spent lots of time down there. My aunt would say how she would have to go and get my grandfather out of the bar on payday so he would bring his money home. So we've got that. And but the traditions, the Sunday dinners, the meatballs, the Christmas Eve, the picnics, 4th of July picnics at my Aunt Mary's house. These were all also part of the story, including my relationship with my cousins. And so we were all pretty close, my cousins. So that's my father's side of the family. My mother's side of the family is from Iraq, Mosul. As many of you have heard of that in the news with the wars that were going on there and ISIS and all of that. My mother's side of the family is, they're Christians, so not Muslims, Christians. A lot of persecution. My understanding is that my great-grandfather, my grandmother's father, to protect his son from being conscripted into the Ottoman Empire. I have a very interesting family history. To being conscripted into the Ottoman Empire, sent my granduncle up to the mountains to go live with the Kurds. We've all heard of the Kurds, right? And the Ottomans captured my great-grandfather and had him shot, executed execution style in the town square in front of my grandmother. So my grandmother now has some post-traumatic stress issues. My grandfather also has some post-traumatic stress issues. He was pretty abused by his father, who also I understand was a holy man, who my understand, this is stories, they're just family stories, who also had the stigmata, which is the holes in the hand from being a holy man. But my grandfather was one of a twin. The twin died. I don't know much about anything else about my grandfather's side of the family. My grandmother, after my great-grandfather was killed, my grandmother and her mother would sit underneath steps and roll cigarettes for the British military. My grandmother and grandfather had an arranged marriage. They never saw each other until the wedding night. And my grandfather's response was he thought my grandmother was skinny and ugly. My grandmother was 13 or 14. My grandfather was in his 30s. The Muslim influence is huge, even on the Christian population. My grandmother, you know, she had herself covered in the burqa, all of that. And so that began the beginnings of a very violent relationship. My understanding, my grandfather also became alcoholic. My grandfather was also bipolar. And my grandmother was very depressed, and also they came here in the 30s. My mother was conceived there, born here. And so my mother was, part of what she would say is that the family would say, if we could only go back, everything is so, we're so poor here. And if you weren't the anchor baby, basically, which, I mean, they could have gone back, but they didn't. And there's a whole lot of other stuff that I'm really not going to go into. So now we have these two people from extremely dysfunctional, alcoholic, violent pasts who meet and get married. My mom was 20. My dad was 23. They met when my mom was 12. My father was working at a grocery store, and my father has an eighth grade education. My mom did graduate high school. And they brought with them their stories and created their marriage with their traditions. And so I have And I'm going to say, as a second-generation American, there's a lot of traditions that are probably food-based. That's probably true with many second-generation people. So it's, you know, maybe we're Polish, we're still making pierogies for Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. You know, we're still making whatever the English, you know, pudding for Christmas Eve and the Yule log. Like there's things that I think food-wise really tends to hang on a little bit more than some of the other kinds of traditions. And so for me, there's a lot of still connection with food. If you go on to Counselor's Chat and look at my promoting of this particular show, it is my husband and I doing the fish dinner on Christmas Eve. So I still do that. I grew up with my grandparents doing that. My mother and father took over doing that. Now I do that. And I do hope maybe somebody that comes after me picks up that tradition. There are other traditions. There is a tradition on Good Friday. So we make this. It's an Arabic meal. It is made with lentils and chickpeas and onions and wheat berries. And my grandmother would say that when Jesus was crucified, the women threw all this in the pot and went and followed, you know, the procession to the cross and watched him die on the cross. And when they got back, their meal was cooked. So this is the tradition. I really don't know. It's possible. So there's that. There's Arabic Christmas cookies that I make now. Baklava is one of them. There are several other things that I make that are, we make at Easter, we make at Christmas. We make, it's called Palm Sunday bread, and so it has turmeric in it, which makes it yellow like palms. So these are traditions that I myself continue to practice. So I have a combination of the Arabic food and I have a combination of the Italian food. My grandfather, Altamira, would say, after we would say grace, he would say, eat slow and eat lots. Well, my father made a little sign, eat slow and eat lots. I have it in my kitchen. My brother has it in his kitchen. I've got cousins who have created the same thing, and it's in there. It's still the family tradition. Eat slow and eat lots. So we still still do that. We still do the 4th of July. However, I'm the only one that still has the original family home that we all, you know, as cousins. So this past year, I did, second year, I did 4th of July at my house. As I said, it used to be my Aunt Mary's thing, which is my father's sister. And so these family traditions are still, they're still lingering a little bit. So our language. Well, actually, I probably should stop and do a little commercial. Let me do that, and I'm going to come back and talk a little bit more about family traditions and just some of the other things that we learn and how it actually can affect our mental health. So I'm Ruth Altamira Roll, your host for Counselor's Chat, and I will be back in just a few moments.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Well, welcome back to Counselor's Chat. I am Ruth Altamirarol, your host for today's program. To find out more about what I do in my practice, you can find me on the web at www.altarol2lscounselor.com. And please follow me on Counselor's Chat to see other past programs that I've done here and also to watch this one. So today I'm talking about our family stories, and I just really told you some things about mine. And there are many, many things that I left out. However, as a counselor, one of the things that I needed to do is take some courses to get my master's in family therapy. So any person who is a licensed professional counselor has taken some courses in family therapy. And one of the things that I liked is something called family systems. I think most of us probably learned about family systems, and that means that family is a system. So what do I mean by that? Each person plays a part. So you think of a car. You know, I can't drive my car without my tires, and I can't drive my car without a steering wheel, and I need the engine, and I need the windshield washer, and I need the oil, and I need the pistons, and I need all of those things in my car to get my car to work. And it's part of the whole system, and the whole system is the car, okay? So we've got the whole family. And then we've got the mother and the father and the grandmother and the grandfather and the aunts and the uncles and the kids and the cousins, the whole family. Even the pet dog is part of the family system. So if the windshield wipers are not working properly, it compromises the car in some way. If I run out of oil, it compromises the car. If I got a flat tire, the whole car, okay? So the concept of family systems basically means each person has a role to play, and the function or the functionality of each person within the family determines whether the family is highly functioning or functions dysfunctionally. So what do I mean by that? Well, if I get a flat tire, I can actually still drive my car. I might be driving it on the wheel, but I can still drive my car. I can still do it. My windshield wiper might not be working, but I can still manage to look, you know, squint and kind of figure out where I am if I need to. But there are some things where if my brakes don't work, it's really pretty dangerous. So in the family system, we have many different ways we can have dysfunction. We can have dysfunction because someone has a mental health issue. So we may have some anxiety. We may have depression. My mom has extreme anxiety. We may have post-traumatic stress. Let's say one of our parents was in the military. Like my dad was in World War II. He wanted to go fight, but because he worked in a grocery store and was a meat cutter, he actually stayed back at Camp Lejeune. He was a Marine, stayed back at Camp Lejeune, and taught other Marines how to cook for the mess, whatever. We didn't have that post-traumatic stress with my dad. But my mom also has post-traumatic stress. My mom has severe issues around abandonment. My grandfather would disappear. My grandmother would, he would just pack up the car and he would leave for a couple of years at a time. Now that my mom is, she's going to be 89 in a couple of weeks, and has a little bit of dementia, not a whole lot, but it's noticeable. And the stories are about my grandfather packing the car and leaving and moving to Richmond. My grandmother trying to commit suicide. Lots of abandonment. My mom says, almost every time I leave, she tells me the story about how she had her appendix out when she was 6 or 7, and how my grandmother would come and visit her with only like 5 minutes, 6 minutes left to the visiting time because my mother was one of 6 kids. My grandmother worked and my grandfather had mental illness, and it was during the Great Depression. And so my mom has a lot of abandonment issues. My mom has a lot of really poor self-esteem issues. My mom was extremely sexually abused as a child. And my mom also now is probably narcissistic. So I've got all this stuff, right, that I grew up with. And this is not the nature, this is the nurture. So my mom's anxiety caused problems. My mom's fear of abandonment caused problems. My mom's post-traumatic stress caused problems. And as a consequence, I ended up with like awful self-esteem. That's the system. Okay, so when the system has issues like bipolar, like alcoholism, like depression and abandonment issues, dealing with tragedy, post-traumatic stress, all of those things play a role in the system. So the family now is not necessarily functioning very well. And there are consequences to that. There's grief issues, depression issues, poor self-esteem, no self-esteem. We learn a language. So there are words that I use that are Arabic words. I use words that are Italian words. And of course, I use English. Now, I don't really speak Italian and I don't really speak Arabic, but there are specific words that I use because that's what I grew up with. There's also words such as, and I say this often to clients, couples, where like there was a lot of yelling and screaming and door slamming and all kinds of things like that. My parents both grew up in violent households, and so again, what did they learn, right? So they brought their victim. We're victims of victims, you know. And so these my grandparents were victims. My parents are victims. They came together. I became a victim. This is the key to counseling. And this is, if your counselor isn't doing this, you need to think about it. And find another counselor. the job of a counselor is not to just have empathy and, oh, you poor thing, you really lived through so much, it's awful, and you stay the victim. It's about saying, you know what, yes, I'm a victim, but I have moved through it. I now am no longer victimized. I am now a hero in my life. Okay, see how that goes on? So that means I've had to do a lot of work. I had to look at my family history. I had to look at the family system. I had to identify what was going on in the family. I needed to look at how that affected me. Okay, part of my family story, how that affected me, and what I needed to do to change so it no longer had that power over me. So often I will hear things like, especially couples, you know, they're arguing over raising children. Well, that's what my parents did to me. It was good enough for me. It's good enough for my kids. Well, that's not necessarily so. If we were raised in dysfunction, the job to be good, healthy, mature parents is to say, you know what happened to me, though I have some scars from it, it's not really what I want to do to my kids. The thing, however, is you don't want to go from this side and swing like a pendulum to this side. You want to be somewhere here in the middle. So I think sort of like I'm going to use my brother as an example. You know, we could not go in the living room. You know, we had to be sitting like this, and you know, really proper in the furniture and the this and the that and all of the things that were going on in my house growing up, how it looked so pristine all the time and was well decorated in the crystal and the Turkish carpets and all of that, to my brother, where he doesn't have any of that, and the kids were allowed to jump on, break the furniture, and run around, and whatever. So he kind of went the other way. So there's not that place in the middle, and that's hard to recognize, because sometimes we tend to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Anything that my parents taught me because it was so dysfunctional, I'm not going to do. Well, there's some things that our parents teach us that are really good, and we want to keep those things. And some of it is family tradition. There are some family traditions that I think are worth keeping, and that's my personal opinion. I've worked with people who said, you know, Christmas, Easter, Hanukkah, whatever the holiday was, the drinking and the violence was so bad that I don't want anything to do with any kind of holiday or family tradition because it was so painful. There's the swing. So I say to people, create your own. You can create your own tradition. You can start with something that you like, that works for you. So we don't need to throw the baby out with the bathwater, as it were. So, you know, we talk about dysfunctional families, and it really is the dysfunction, families work in with dysfunction. There are things that do happen. So we become codependent, or we have somebody that is codependent. That person tends to be the adult taking care of the person with the mental health issue, the alcohol issue, or a drug addiction, the physical issue, all of those things. So this person is the codependent and the caretaking, generally adult, making up for the deficiencies of the other adult. Then what happens is children take on roles. So in other words, when you grow up in a dysfunctional family, you really cannot be genuine and authentic, because you're not going to fit in this family. We do this. No kid of mine is going to play the violin. In this family, we play the piano. Okay, so that would be an example. I'm sorry, you're no kid of mine's going to be an artist. We're a family of lawyers. You're going to go to law school. So we have to fit into the family. We have to fit into the system. And so we take on roles. So the first role, and this is based on four kids in the family. So you've got the dysfunctional person, you've got the codependent taking care of the dysfunction, and then you've got the four kids. So we've got the family hero. Now the family hero does well in school, grows up and can marry well, own a business, go to college, look to be really successful. But on the inside, really poor self-esteem, a lot of self-doubt, may become codependent and marry an alcoholic or a drug addict or someone who's got similar family issues. The word family and familiar, same root. So I grew up with alcoholism and dysfunction. I marry an alcoholic. Marry somebody depressed. Marry somebody who's anxious. Not an uncommon thing. That's the first one. The second one is this called the family scapegoat. Now, the family scapegoat, that person, a lot of times doesn't complete school, gets involved with drugs, gets involved with, the police are here, getting calls from the principal's office. This kid is just misbehaving. And the reason why it's scapegoat, if this kid would only get their act together, our family would work better. But the problem really is not that kid. The problem really is the dysfunction with mom and dad. They're it's imbalanced right there at the very top. And oftentimes this kid tends to, that's the kid that can't hold down a job and in and out of rehab and moving to Colorado to smoke pot and I don't know, all of those things. Then you have someone called the lost child. Now, the lost child says, well, there's already the family hero, and I cannot do that one because, they're the football champion and, queen of the prom and all of that stuff. And I'm not going to create all the problems that the scapegoat does, so I'm just going to keep quiet and keep to myself. And in each one of these roles, there's always low self-esteem. So the lost child tends to be a loner, doesn't really have friends, isolates, can be very creative, writing and reading and doing artwork, being musical, but really kind of stays away from the family. And then we've got somebody called the mascot. And the mascot is silly, runs around and says, come on, let's lift the spirits here. Let's get things up. That's the class clown. That's the person that's, you're 50 years old and you still just can't, you're still just a goof. You just can't seem to grow up. So there is that. So that's the dysfunctional family system. The idea of counseling is going and looking at the family, the system, what you learned, and what you decide is going to be useful, what you decide you're going to keep, and what you decide you are going to move away from. You may need to learn how to build your self-esteem, how to take better care of yourself physically. You may have to look at your relationships and learn how to choose healthy relationships for yourself. There may be some issues around career development. Definitely the self-care. Many, many different things like that. So family stories are really important. So the more you know about your family, and the more you can identify the dysfunction in your family and the role that you play and the role that others play and begin to recognize that I don't want to play a role. I want to become more genuine. I want to be the person I was born to be. I don't want to be the person that's carrying around the family weight, the family honor, the family negativity, the family negative language, the family's depression, just because, My dad was an alcoholic. Does it mean that I need to marry one or be one? Just because, you know, I come from a family of lawyers, if I want to be on the stage and that's who I am, then I do that. I definitely promote moving away from being the victim of your family and becoming the hero of your own life. So not the family hero, but your own hero in your own life to be a success in being who you are. Know who you are. Cherish who you are. And some of us have families that have helped us get there, and some of us didn't. And I know for myself, my own years of being in counseling has moved me from being a family victim to a hero in my own life. So if you are interested in counseling, please, you can look me up on the web, www.altarolecounselor.com. Follow me on Counselor's Chat. I am Ruth Altamura Roll, your host for Counselor's Chat. I am a licensed professional counselor. I've got my master's in counseling, nationally certified. And you can give me a call at 908-237-2899. That's 908-237-2899. To make an appointment, to make a comment on the show. I'd love to hear from you if you have a suggestion for a show. And I wish you all good mental health and have a great week. And happy Veterans Day. Thank you, actually, to all the veterans who have served our country so well. We would not have the freedoms that we have if it had not been for you. So I just want to tell you that I appreciate you, all the veterans. Got them in my family, lots of them, including my husband. And we'll be back next week with Counselor's Chat, actually with Steve Roll, and we are going to talk about military families. So I will be back next week with Counselor's Chat. I am Ruth Altamura Roll. I wish you all a pleasant day.
When friends are not enough and you are struggling with depression, anxiety, or addictions, it's time to seek out help. Mental health is one of the most important building blocks to a healthy life. Tune into Counselor's Chat every Wednesday at noon and listen to many topics that pertain to good mental health. With Ruth Altamura Roll, a licensed professional counselor, as your host, you will learn about many facets of good mental health. Let's remove the stigma. Go to www.altarolecounselor.net for more information about my practice. And please follow me on Counselor's Chat on Facebook. Remember, Counselor's Chat every Wednesday at noon. I wish you good mental health.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial Advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heidi and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B.